All right, we're going to be wrapping up our study of Luke tonight. And it really hasn't been a detailed study of Luke. If I, you know, really wanted to study Luke, you know, really get it all, you know, I'd want to take at least a couple of quarters. But the idea was, you know, I was asked to do something on becoming more like Jesus, and I thought, you know, anchoring it in one of the Gospels, I thought that would work for us. And I hope it's worked in that way, you know, as we've tried to get the basics of the book, you know, and maybe more than just the basics. We've hit a few details. But I do want you to remember, our chief aim this quarter is to try to be able to see Jesus, appreciate Him, and ultimately try to become more like Him. You know, there are things we can't do that He did, but His dedication to God, His love for man, you know, those kinds of things we can imitate. But as we come to the end of the study, I want us to appreciate the fact that the book closes on a note of victory. You think about what we've been looking at the last few lessons. In the last few chapters, we see that betrayal. We see Him arrested. You know, all the mocking and just the abuse He takes that's both mental and physical. We see Him brutally scourged. We see Him crucified, hanging on a cross for 6 hours of torture. What an awful thing. And then, in chapter 24, we see victory. You know, most of you probably heard of Thomas Jefferson's edition of the Bible, where he edited his Bible, and it ends with Jesus being put in the tomb. That's not where the story ends. And Romans 1, 3, and 4 says that Jesus was declared to be the Son of God with power by the resurrection from the dead. And Luke is going to show us that. You know, the second volume, what's the next book he writes? Acts. And I believe he had in mind his intention to write Acts when he wrote Luke because of some of the way he deals with things in the 24th chapter. But he's going to stress there are witnesses to this. Though, one of the reasons I think he had in mind, and understand this, when I talk about an author like Luke having in mind, I believe the book was inspired of God. But inspiration, it always took into account who the person was and, you know, such. But he doesn't give us as many resurrection appearances as some of the other writers. When we come to his account of the Great Commission, you'll notice something really important missing. He doesn't mention baptism. He writes his second volume. He's going to stress the, you know, indisputable evidence for the resurrection. He's going to tell us about baptism over and over and over again. You know, the book, you know, his story wasn't finished with Luke 24. But as we pick up in Luke 24, remember what was going on at the end of chapter 23. Who was it that asked for the body of Jesus? Joseph of Arimathea, a rich councilman. According to John, who assisted him in the burial? Nicodemus. But what I want to notice in Luke is when he's been put in the tomb, it said, verse 55, the women who had come with him from Galilee followed after, and they observed the tomb and how his body was laid. Then they returned and prepared spices and fragrant oils, and they rested on the Sabbath according to the commandment. Chapter divisions help us in order to, you know, for me to be able to tell you, turn to chapter 24 tonight. That's a lot easier. But the beginning of chapter 4 directly ties to what he's just said at the end of chapter 23. These women took note of where it was, and they rest on the Sabbath, but they're getting ready for what we would call Sunday morning. And they're going to come back and anoint the body with some more of this. And this map's just intended to remind you, everything we're looking at right now is in and around Jerusalem. And look at chapter 24, verse 1. When does it say these women came back to the tomb? Early on the first day of the week. Now, throughout the Old Testament, what was the weekly holy day? What we'd call Saturday. They called it the Sabbath, the seventh day. The seventh day was the day of rest. It was a day of holy convocation. We come to the book of Acts, and we're reading chapter 20, verse 7. On the first day of the week, the disciples came together to break bread. We're reading in 1 Corinthians 16, the collection, first day of the week. And, the reality is we're never told specifically, this is why it's not the Sabbath anymore. It's now the first day of the week. But I don't think there's any doubt that what Christians were to remember is that day of victory. And interestingly, what do we remember on the first day of the week every week? The death. I mean, think about it. We remember his death, and yet we don't do it. He doesn't have us meet on Friday, or some would think it was on Thursday, but we don't meet on the day of his death. We meet on the day that remembers that death didn't conquer him, that he had the victory, and so can we. Well, back to the story. These women are going to the tomb, and you cannot help but admire their dedication, their love for Jesus, and yet, what's the flaw in their action? Well, they expect him to be in the tomb. What's he been saying repeatedly? I'll be killed, and on the third day, what? I'll rise. They love the Lord. And of course, what was wrong with their thinking? Same thing wrong with the thinking of all the disciples. They just couldn't grasp this idea he would rise from the dead. Now, if you put Matthew and Mark into this, obviously they're unaware of the fact that a Roman guard has been posted. After Jesus was put in the tomb, Jewish officials went to Pilate and they got a guard. The Roman seal was put on it. I don't think they know about that. And they were concerned. This is a really big stone. How are we going to get that stone out of the way? Well, they didn't have to worry about that. The stone was rolled away from the tomb. It was not there. And the tomb was open. And so, again, not even suggesting this is the tomb in which Jesus was buried, but tombs were much like this, carved out of rock, and this large stone was there, and the angel has rolled it back. But the indication is the angel didn't roll the stone back so Jesus could come out. The angel rolled the stone away so people could see the tomb was empty. And, they go in and they don't see a body. And then, verse 4, they see these two men in shining garments. Verse 23 says they saw a vision of angels. They saw angels who had taken the form of men. And these women are afraid. And the great question, why do you seek the living among the dead? And there's something really interesting in this. Living is a singular, and dead is plural. You've come seeking the one who is alive, in a place where dead people are buried. You're in the wrong place. He is not here, but is risen. Remember how he spoke to you when he was still in Galilee, saying, the Son of Man must be delivered into the hand of sinful men and be crucified, and the third day rise again.
Hey, John.
Yes.
You mentioned the Romans putting a guard there because they didn't want people to steal the body. They were reporting in the gospel that says they'll steal the body. They remembered.
Yeah.
I mean, that's ironic. And but bless their hearts. I mean, there was so much going on. It's hard to fathom. But the Romans didn't. They were more concerned about the conspiracy. They wanted to make sure.
Yeah. It was the Jewish leaders that went to the. They said, you know, he claimed he was going to rise. That's exactly. And they didn't want, of course, they didn't think he would rise, but they said, you know, somebody will steal his body and claim he's risen. That's, you know, interestingly, they remembered it better than the disciples. But now they remember it. And they went back and told the apostles. And it named some of the women. Luke skips over. And to me, this is part of the interesting thing about the different books. Of the four Gospels, Luke probably gives more attention to the roles that women played in the ministry of Jesus, in the service, and yet he doesn't tell us the first appearance, according to John, was to Mary Magdalene. And it was, then he appeared to these women that were there. He skips that after he's done all this. But they go back, and it just seemed like idle tales. The apostles didn't believe him. I mean, here they are, they say, the tomb is empty, and two men in this bright, shining apparel said, he's not here, he's risen, just like he said he would. And the apostles still wouldn't believe it. But Peter decided to go check it out. And according to the Gospel of John, John was with him. And some of you may remember, John outran him. John kind of stooped and looked down. Peter just went on in and, you know, saw it. Verse 12, Peter was marveling to himself. I take that to mean he's beginning to think here. Maybe in his mind he's beginning to say, could it be? He did say those things. Could it be? Now, what we will find later on in verse 34, that sometime that day there is an appearance to Simon. But it's not at this moment. It's sometime later. What Luke decides, you know, in his inspiration to do next is tell us about two men who were traveling to Emmaus. And I've tried to use the arrow to point to it. You see Jerusalem, you see Emmaus. It was 60 stadia away, or stadia, and estimated 6 to 7 miles. Nobody's absolutely certain as to where Emmaus was. This is the best guess. The most evidence points to that little place. That doesn't matter. It was a village, a small place, and these two men are walking along. Now, one of them's named Cleopas. I don't know what the other guy's name was. That Luke gives us one of the names might suggest that Cleopas was known in the first century. The people would recognize that name, you know, possibly. But these two guys are walking along, and you know, it's getting up into the afternoon, and they're conversing, they're reasoning. Verse 14, they're talking about the things which had happened. These two men, they're not apostles, but evidently they had a closeness to the apostles because they know about the women reporting to the apostles. And here comes Jesus. Now you just imagine these two guys, they're downhearted, as they're going to explain in a moment why. You know, and here comes Jesus, and somehow he kept them from being able to recognize him. You know, and it, I think there has to be some kind of miraculous element in that, not just, well, you know, sometimes if you're not expecting someone, it takes you a minute to recognize them. He talks with them a good while. He walks with them. You know, they don't pick up on his voice. You know, they don't pick up on his face. I think that there's a miraculous blindness, deafness. Not deaf, they could hear, but Jesus joins them and he says, you know, what are y'all talking about? Y'all are so sad. And Cleopas, it's almost humorous the way he says, are you new to town? Did you just get here today? You know, to paraphrase, he said, you know, people know around here. You know, he said, Jesus, what things are you talking about? Well, he says, Jesus of Nazareth. He was a prophet, and he was mighty in deed and word before God and the people. And the chief priests and the rulers delivered him to be condemned to death and crucified him. You know, Cleopas, you don't know this? You know, is saying it to Jesus, that he was a great prophet, and yet our leaders killed him. And we really hoped he was going to bring redemption to Israel. I don't know if they're thinking in physical, spiritual, you know, but they said, verse 21, today is the third day since these things happened. Jesus had repeatedly said the third day, and they said, this is the third day. But then they keep going, and they said, now, there were some women of our company. They went to the tomb early, and they astonished us, verse 22. They didn't find his body, and they came saying that they had also seen a vision of angels who said he was alive. And certain of those who were with us went to the tomb and found it just as the women had said. You know, that'd be at least Peter and John. But then it says, but him they did not see. You know, here are these two disciples. And they're evidently, they're pretty closely associated with that inner circle. Because they know what Peter and John did that day. They know what the women did who came and reported. And they've heard about the women and the visitation of angels. They've evidently heard Peter and John went there and found the cloths lying there. But they don't believe. And Jesus says, oh, foolish ones and slow of heart to believe in all that the prophets have spoken. Ought not the Christ to have suffered these things and to enter into his glory? And remember, we think of Christ almost like Jesus' middle name. You know, the Christ is the equivalent, it's a title, the Messiah, whomever he be. You know, and of course it is Jesus. But he said, did you not read what the prophet said? The Messiah had to suffer and enter into his glory. And beginning at Moses and all the prophets, he expounded to them in all the scriptures the things concerning himself. I mean, if you are a Christian, you know, you look back at Bible events, and oftentimes there are things you say, I wish I could have been there. You know, I wish I could have been there on that mountainside for the Sermon on the Mount. I wish I could have, you know, seen that fire when Elijah prayed. Wouldn't you have loved to have heard Jesus expounding the Old Testament here? telling them all these things in the scriptures, starting with Moses. And I can see, I don't know all the scriptures he used. Genesis 3:15. The seed of woman, what would happen to him? The serpent would do what? Bruise his heel. But what would the son of woman do to the seed of woman do to the serpent? Bruise his head. Yeah. And then, you know, we could keep going. I can see him talking about Isaac. And of course, we can think about Isaiah 53, Psalm 22, Psalm 16. You know, other passages, the Christ had to suffer and then enter into his glory. And may I just suggest to you, Peter, that's a theme he uses over and over and over again in 1 Peter. Suffering and glory. He writes to a people suffering and he tells them repeatedly, Jesus suffered and now is in his glory. You are suffering. If you'll hold the path, hold course, you will enter into glory. But the Christ had to do this. And I don't know at what point along the way he joined them. You know, if it was shortly outside of Jerusalem, you know, they would have had over 2 hours probably. You know, but Jesus is expounding it. And later what they're going to say is, our hearts burned within us as he was talking about the scripture. And I think our hearts ought to burn within us just reading these great stories. But they get near Emmaus. And don't you love, I mean, you're trying to picture this. I mean, I don't know what the three look like. But they're walking along in its village and Jesus just walking like he's just going to keep on going down the road. And they're like, no, it's getting late. You know, the day's about over. You know, it's toward evening. Come on in and stay with us. And it skips over from, you know, him agreeing to they're at the table. The meal's ready. And do you notice what the guest now does? The guest begins to act as though he's the host. And he takes the bread and he blesses it. And he broke it and gave it to them. You know, they didn't have sliced bread. They didn't have, you know, individual, you know, Sister Schubert rolls. You know, you had the bread and you gave thanks. And he starts to distribute. And then their eyes were opened. And again, I think it's a miraculous thing. And they go, it's Jesus. And as soon as they recognize it's Jesus, what happens? He's gone. Isn't that? Oh, don't you know they're like, oh, what the questions we could have asked, the things we could have said, you know, and yeah, it's, you know, as they tell their children and, you know, he vanishes and they're like, why didn't we catch on earlier? Our hearts were burning within us while he talked with us on the road and while he opened the scriptures to us. We knew this was something special, and you can just almost picture them hitting themselves saying, why didn't we get it? But now I want you to think about something. It's 6 to 7 miles from Jerusalem, and I don't know, the text says it was about 7 miles. There's some question of the exact length of the stadia, so, you know, that's the only reason we say 6 to 7, you know, it was a little inexact in their time. If it's only 6, walking at a pretty good pace in the dark, it's going to take you a couple of hours to get there, probably. You know, walking fair. I mean, they've just walked the 6 miles. But they turn around, they head right back to Jerusalem. They want to share with the apostles what has happened. And they get back to Jerusalem and found the 11 and those who were with them. I mean, there were some other disciples there. Now, the 11, what happened to the 12? Judas has killed himself by now. The 11 means the apostles. From John's account, were there actually 11 of them there that night? Thomas was missing. Now, it is possible that Thomas was there when he first got there, and you know, but I think, and then left, I think it more likely that it means the 11 is just a name for the apostles. I mean, just imagine these guys. They come back to Jerusalem, and they are so excited, and they're ready to share the good news. And when they get there, and they probably had to knock and get entrance because John says the door was locked that night. The apostles say, "The Lord is risen indeed. It has appeared to Simon." You just see this almost like, well, that's what we were coming to tell you. You know, and then they told their story about what happened on the road and how, as he was breaking the bread, they realized who it was. And you just try to picture how dejected they had been on what we would call Friday. And just can't imagine the sadness of Saturday. And of course, in Peter, I mean, you know, he had wept bitterly over his denial of Jesus. And then even that day, they got up. And when the word first came to them from the women, seemed like idle tales. But now they believe until Jesus stands in the midst of them. And John's account says the door was locked. And suddenly he's there and he says, "Peace to you." And they were terrified and frightened and supposed they had seen a spirit. Now, it would appear that at this point they had come to faith. And yet when Jesus appears, they don't believe it's him. You know, there's faith, and then there's faith, you know. I mean, they weren't expecting to see him that night. And they're just now coming to this new belief. And Jesus said, don't be troubled. I'm not a spirit. You know, verse 39, "Behold my hands and my feet. That is I myself. Handle me and see. A spirit does not have flesh and bones as you see I have." And John 20 and verse 20, he even mentions the side where the spear had pierced it. And verse 41 really tells you what it's all about. They still did not believe for joy. They're just so excited that they just like, "I can't believe it. Can this be real?" You know, I'm like, and they're amazed. And he says, "Have you got some food?" And they give him some broiled fish and some honeycomb, and he ate it. And I think they were convinced. We all know the story of when they see Thomas, they're like, "You missed it. He's alive." And Thomas had to be convinced the next week. But I want you to take note of something about verses 44 through 53. If you're just reading casually through Luke here, and that's the only book you have, you would think that at least 44 through 49 happened that same night. And that perhaps Jesus even ascended up in the nighttime. Luke doesn't give you an obvious break. But when we get to Acts, he's going to tell us that for a period of 40 days, Jesus appeared to them. Luke in the whole gospel, throughout it. I've been talking about, he is often thematic and not chronological. And I mean by that, that he groups ideas and concepts in an orderly fashion. And he doesn't always go, you know, day by day, hour by hour. You know, things are out of order. Time-wise, they're in perfect order as far as the theme goes. And I believe verses 44 through 49 are words that were probably spoken later. You know, this is our third account of the Great Commission. You think about that. You've got Matthew 28, Mark 16, you've got Luke 24 here. There is no doubt that Luke and Matthew are spoken on different occasions. I believe Mark also, Mark 16, appears to be a different. We often talk about the need to, you know, put all three accounts together to get the full picture, and that's exactly true. Each one of them has some element that the others don't. But there's also something significant about the fact that at least three different times during those 40 days, Jesus would say, go preach to every creature. Go into all the world and preach to every creature. Go make disciples of all the nations. You know, this gospel is to be preached to all nations beginning at Jerusalem. He didn't just say it once to his disciples. He really emphasized this to them. And, you know, the other accounts tell about him going up into Galilee. You know, Luke omits that. But he says, picking back up at verse 44, which I think probably chronologically happens near the end, he said, I told you these things. And again, he opens their understanding that they might comprehend the scripture. And I don't think the opening their understanding is miraculous. Now that they have witnessed his death and his resurrection, he could explain passages like Isaiah 53 and Psalm 16, and they could understand them. And here's what he tells them. He said, you go tell the world that they can have remission of sins in my name. You know, it's, you know. But what's the condition? Repentance. You know, we often, you know, hear people say, come as you are. Come as you are, but you better not expect Jesus to leave you the way you are. Jesus intends to change you. His gospel will take the most wicked, vile sinner and offer grace unto him. But that sinner has to change. And he introduces that. But you notice, Matthew and Mark both mention baptism. Luke doesn't. Because he's only going to mention it in Acts 2, in Acts 8, Acts 9, Acts 10, you know, Acts 16, Acts 18, you know, he's saving that for later. You know, real quickly, verse 48, you are witnesses. That will be a theme in the book of Acts. When you read Acts, you watch that theme. Wait for the power, you know, it would give them the ability to confirm their message. It would also bring to their remembrance. He took them out to, and I moved the arrow just a little bit, back over here, Bethany. Bethany was on the eastern slope of the Mount of Olives. And interestingly, he lifts his hands and he blesses them. And it would appear, while he's blessing them, he just begins to rise up. Acts 1 gives more details about the ascension, but they went back to Jerusalem and they went back with joy and worshiped in the temple. Real quickly. Oh, yeah, I got 4 minutes. I can do it. Here are the takeaways that I came up with. Let us make sure that we understand He is risen. He was declared to be the Son of God with power. The story of Jesus ends in victory. That can be our victory. And that rests on the testimony of eyewitnesses. People who touched, who felt, not subjective. They were slow to believe, but they came to believe. When I look at these men, and Jesus is so foolish and slow of heart to understand, I need to look at that as a warning to me. That sometimes even the most devoted follower, it may take a little while. I need to realize I can be in danger of that. But one of the things, Jesus is the story of the Old Testament. He is all through Moses. As he says in verse 44, the law of Moses, the prophets, the Psalms, wherever you look, there is Jesus. Those men said, our hearts burned within us. Bible study ought to excite us. Not just for the learning of some new fact, but as it reveals God to us, as it reveals the Savior, it ought to cause us to burn. Understand, without repentance, there's no remission of sins. And let's be like the apostles after coming to this solid faith. They worshiped with joy. Now, what about Jesus? What can we learn from to be like Him? Well, learn to be patient with those who are slow to see. He brought them to faith. Don't give up on people. One of the keys, and I mentioned this in the book of 1 Peter, but if we want to be like Jesus, we need to keep that hope set before us at all times. We need to be looking to that glory, but we need to realize, like Jesus, we may have to suffer. We may have to go through difficulty. It's part of the way God refines our character. It's part of the way we become like Him. The last thing, and I say this because I mentioned three different times it would appear He gave them that commission. He had a great concern for all the nations. Am I concerned for people? What I can do for somebody 5,000 miles away is relatively limited. That's, we can do some things, the way we're helping in Zimbabwe. It can make a difference. But I've got neighbors. I've got family. I've got friends that are lost. Jesus came and died for them. I mean, that demonstrates His concern. And He said it over and over again in the Great Commission. Let's grow in our concern for the proclamation of the gospel. Well, that's the end. And I hope it's been helpful to you. One of the things